You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 1st of June, and day one of Level 3 lockdown. I am Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll be chatting Derek Janssen van Rensburg, he of Anchor Securities. We've also got the CEO of Robex Group on infrastructure and IRP spending. And then Alec Abram from Sasfin on changes to retailing after, and I suppose during, the later stages of lockdown. Some morning headlines from Business Day. High Court refuses government bid to delay tobacco ban hearing. And from Reuters, China's May factory activity returns to growth, but demand remains weak. Morning markets, Friday, the US S&P 500 was up 0.5%, NASDAQ up 1.3%. This morning, Asia is mostly green. Sydney and Tokyo are both up, and they're green 0.9% and 1% respectively. Commodities mixed, no big movers except palladium, up 1%. Gold literally just a couple of cents higher. The rand against the dollar, 17.44. And the top 40 opening call is looking for 1.5% higher this morning.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities. Derek, morning. Thanks for your time. Tomorrow is the final day for Remgro shareholders to qualify to receive their RMH shares. Should unlock some value. How are you guys at Anchor playing this? Or is this something you're just sort of watching from the sidelines? I mean, my sense is Remgro still holds a lot of other listed Mediclinic and the like. Is this a big deal or relatively small in your lives?
Look, I think since the announcement, you know, a lot of the news has probably been factored in with that discount closing somewhat. I think where we sit at this stage of the game is, you know, RMH certainly a signature asset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm actually quite bullish on the unbundling going into the last day to trade. So, you know, in all likelihood, I would see some value unlock, even if it's just by a little bit. But obviously on Friday, we did get somewhat of a sell-off in some of the major SA Inc. Banking players. So just looking forward, I think, you know, if you are a Remgro holder, some of the periphery assets still look quite interesting. That said, I am a little bit concerned about Mediclinic and the lack of occupancy in those hospitals due to the COVID-19 in the current environment. But generally, I think these deep discount to net asset value plays, the likes of PSG, Remgro, even RMI is also something that's raising an eyebrow at the moment. Looks quite interesting, you know, and I think, you know, there's lots of pressure for, you know, the directors of these net asset value deep discount plays to returns to shareholders ultimately. So, yeah, I think it's quite well placed and there should be some value unlock. Nothing major, but certainly some value unlock.
Something there. And surely one of the big things around a holding stock, such as you mentioned PSG, such as Remgro and the like, my sense has always been hold less listed stuff because I can buy that listed. Hold the unlisted because that then is more attractive to me. I mean, African Rainbow Capital is another there that's got some interesting unlisted assets.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I think if you are going to hold these sum of the part type businesses, you want to get access to businesses that you wouldn't naturally have access to on the exchange. So certainly talks to the African Rainbow Capital with some of the RAN assets, Time Bank, etc. You know, that generally is stuff that I'd like to hold with a 5-year plus type time horizon, and hopefully those do ultimately come to market in time. But you want to be early in and take a long-term view with assets that you would normally not have access to. You know, the likes of a PSG, you can get your Capitex, you know, in the market, PSG Consults, you know, you've got access to it. So typically in this kind of market environment, you'd rather want to hold the listed entity directly and then ultimately, you know, look at some of those key niche players like that African Rainbow Capital trading at deep discounts, but access to some really quality assets.
Steinhoff came out with some numbers on Friday. They were numbers to September, so these are way old. I mean, once the darling of our market, when Steinhoff numbers come out on Friday, I'll be honest, I kind of thought I'll get to that later. Is Steinhoff just really become a small cap with which has, you know, frankly, bankruptcy and legal risk and almost non-investable for serious investors?
Yeah, I mean, since the news broke and obviously the Steinhoff saga played out, this share price has moved into the small cap space. There is still so much work that needs to be done in terms of either liquidating certain assets, cleaning up balance sheets, going through regulatory frameworks to make sure that they're on a clean footing. And I still think it's just going to take time. So, you know, just really, like you, it's almost non-investable for me at this stage, and it's not going to be investable for some time to come. So, really, doesn't excite me. I think you just want to take a back seat. And if anything, I doubt there's very much value. I mean, the share price is where it is for a reason, and the market seems to have priced in quite a lot of hurdles to cross before you can get a sort of a clean outcome and sort of a way forward for Steinhoff at this stage.
Yeah, that where it is R1.01 as of Friday's close. That was Derek Jansen van Rensburg, he of Anchor Securities. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I got the Rabex Group CEO, Rudolf Johannes Fourie, at the moment. They had on the line, they had year-end results to February. Revenue up 2%, operating margin 5.5%. That's not bad at all. Rudolf, appreciate your time. Locally under level 5, nothing was happening. Today, back to level 3. Is Rabex pretty much up and operating under level 3?
Yeah, morning, Simon. From today, the whole construction sector is open again. For the first month of May, we're about 50% back to capacity. And hopefully from today, we'll get 100% going in the construction space. So construction from level 3 is open from today.
And construction, and it depends, I suppose, on the type of construction, but it's one of those industries, I suspect, that is probably maybe more able to do sort of the requirements around COVID-19 risk reduction in terms of, you know, keeping a distance and the like. And I'm referencing this against perhaps retail and particularly underground mining.
Yeah, I think we're more suitable for social distancing. And we're working under strict health regulations and screening, so I think it should be quite possible for us to work without, you know, spreading the virus.
You mentioned in your results that you are, and I quote, encouraged by a substantial increase in tender activity observed in the second half of the year. What is competition on those tenders like? I mean, you know, we've obviously had a sector that has really struggled. A couple of your competitors, listed and unlisted, going into business rescue, not surviving. Is it still cutthroat for those tenders?
Yeah, unfortunately, the pricing is still marginal on those tenders. From a listed environment, there's not a lot of companies tender. It's basically ourselves and all somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still in construction quite a number of private companies, strong private companies that operate, which still tender quite aggressively in the market. So pricing is not ideal yet. Hopefully it will improve. But as you said, it was quite encouraging the number of tenders that came to the market. So hopefully they'll get awarded and we could get going now.
There's some also talk of infrastructure, and I think this is going to be a global phenomenon as we sort of come out of lockdown. Governments around the world spend some infrastructure. There's lots of benefits to that. I imagine a fair bit going into roads, but of course Rabex, which came to market as roads, I remember when you guys were buying your bitumen assets many years ago, but you're going to benefit. You've got your materials division. You've got an infrastructure division. If we start to see this spend coming, Rabex is well positioned for it.
Yeah, we're well positioned, and we've got a strong balance sheet, and we've got a lot of capacity at the moment available, because, as you know, we didn't do a lot of work in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're well positioned, hopefully, and we hope that the government will bring out infrastructure spend to boost our economy. And if that happens, then Rabex will be well positioned to execute on that.
We also saw October last year, which is now, what's that, almost 7 months ago, 8 months ago, Cabinet approved Integrated Resource Plan 2019. I'm assuming Robex would tender for that. Certainly you've got the skill sets. Has there been any progress, anything happening in that space?
Now, in the short term, nothing has happened, but medium to long term, if the government executes that resource plan, there will be quite a lot of work, much more when you're doing at the moment, solar work available. I mean, we won't have enough capacity. We'll have to increase our capacity to do the rollout as they got it in the Government Gazette. So we're quite encouraged by it. So if they stick to it and they roll it out, it could be a good prospect for solar energy.
Yeah, and as you say, green energy infrastructure, we need both. They also, they employ people, they get economic activity in the country. Last question, Rudolph, how much work is Robex doing beyond our borders? I mean, you're in Australia, you've got some business into the rest of the African continent. How significant is that for the group?
Yeah, so we're working in Australia. The operation in Australia is going quite well, in Western Australia, Perth. We're quite encouraged about what's happening there, and they got, you know, we're delivering quite stable results for the last 2 years already there. So we're quite pleased with what's happening in Australia. And then we work in the rest of Africa, in Namibia, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, where we do a lot of work at the moment. So we do quite a lot of work in Botswana. But we tend to stay to more countries closer to South Africa.
Yeah, I saw that. And the sort of the front-line states, keep it close to home. Things I've got to do for that. Yeah. That's Rudolph Johannes Ferreira. He is CEO of Robex Group. Appreciate your time this morning, sir.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now.
With Simon Brown.
On the Money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Alec Abram. He's a senior equity analyst at Sasfin. He covers equities, but Alec Abram, to me, is our retail expert when we want to get some retail. Alec, appreciate your time. I wanted to kick off. We live in, and I know unprecedented is an overused word, but we do. We're going to level three as of today, 1 June. We're going to see significant spikes. Pepco's talked about it already post-lockdown. We're going to see it in liquor. My question is, how do we gauge what this new normal looks like? We've got consumers under pressure. We've got consumers who, frankly, lack confidence, which is important. This adds significant complexity, not just to the retailers, but to us as investors as we try and figure out what retail will look like over the next month, 6 or 12.
Yes, Sam. Thank you very much for having me on your show. You're quite right. And I suppose let's try to look at it from one at a time. First, from the retailer's point of view, I know that a number of the retailers were going into the winter season with consumer spending under pressure already.
Yeah.
So a lot of them have tempered their ordering. But with the lockdown, there's the chance that a lot of the orders that already been produced and on the water couldn't be cancelled. So do they have too much stock or don't they? That's a very big question. And I think it'll all depend on whether on how high that spike is after the lockdown is over, that people will go to the stores to buy the clothing that they couldn't buy and things like that. So it's a very, very difficult time right now to determine how high that spike is going to be, how long that spike is going to last. All of the retailers are already initiating sort of tactic to try and move stock. So I see we've already seen a lot of sales to try and get the stock moving. But like I said, I don't know how long that spike is going to last. I don't know what the new normal is going to be after we get over the spike. My expectation is that it's going to be a lot lower than we were before. We've been, South Africa's GDP has been lower than the population growth rate for probably about 6 years now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Consumers, we've been getting poorer.
Yeah.
So, and we've been seeing that in the volume numbers that the retailers have been showing. Now, with the lockdown and a lot of people probably going to lose their job or lose large parts of their livelihood, I expect the new normal is going to be a lot lower than what we were before we went into the lockdown. So I think we're going to see a spike. but it's going to dissipate very quickly, and it's going to be our normal volumes are going to be even lower than the poultry volumes we've been seeing coming in the last couple of months into this. But what I do know, Simon, is that I'm going to be wrong, because it's so uncertain to be able to call.
But one of the implications of this is the retailers re-looking at their businesses, re-looking at, frankly, the number of stores, and oftentimes I think they frankly overtraded, looking at the lines, the product lines they're holding, and the range thereof, and obviously having a good hard look at online. Is it sustainable? How do they sort of get more out of that online business? In essence, having a strong hard look at broadly how they operate within the retail environment.
Yes, Simon, you've hit on all the key points there. One of the things we are seeing, and we've been seeing for a little while now, is companies streamlining their estate. They sort of being more aggressive in terms of closing underperforming stores, where in the past they would have kept it open just to keep that ground.
Yeah.
They're now more aggressively closing the stores. And I think it's from two points of view. One is right-sizing the capital that they've got in their capacity base to match the addressable market. And as I said, the addressable market has been shrinking as we've been getting poorer. So I think that's one aspect. The other aspect is how much of the retail sales are going to go online. Now, it's still quite small in South Africa, but is the lockdown and the online activity we've seen going to give a huge boost online? And obviously that's going to play into how much store space the companies need. So I think they've been reducing already, but they still don't quite know how to deal with the online aspect. You know, in South Africa, we've got two economies. We've got a sort of a first world economy and first world income standards and first world usage of the internet. And then we've got third world income standards and third yeah. world usage of the internet. So it's difficult to be able to say how much of that they can allocate, how much capital they can allocate to that online store in South Africa, because we've got these two worlds. So it is very difficult, but that's one of the key aspects that they are addressing. And then the other point that you raised, Simon, is the ranges that they keep in store. Because you've been seeing volumes coming off, and that then puts pressure on the rebate that the retailers get for sales volumes. So what a lot of them have tended to do, and I think the latest example of that is Pick and Pay, actually, starting to curate the ranges that they stock so that they can sell more of fewer things, so that they can get more rebates on the things that they're selling more. And that's in order to try and manage their gross profit margin in a lower volume environment. And so those are definitely two aspects we're going to still see quite a bit of development on in terms of the range of store and tiering their stores and what ranges they have in different stores, but also in being a lot more aggressive on their store estate and weeding out the underperforming stores much more aggressively than they used to in the past, but also re-looking at how quickly to expand. All of the retailers have indicated that their store expansion plans are a lot more moderate than they used to be in the past. They're looking much more judiciously at whether or not they need to expand the store base.
We'll leave that there. That's Sasfin, Senior Equity Analyst, Alec Abram. Alec, appreciate the time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. at moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. And, of course, the podcast available wherever good podcasts are caught. And that from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social medias, Twitters, Facebooks, using hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening, my guests for their time, producer Cordora and sound Boffinetti. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.